It's their pro forma. If it's not met, ask them to stand behind it. Second amendment would be to reject Metro's secrecy pledge. In other words, if Hyatt wants $60 million of public money, be transparent. Tell us what the projections of performance in terms of occupancy and rate really are, and let the public review those. What does Metro have to hide? They believe in those projections. Let us see what they are. Third, tie Hyatt's management contract to performance benchmarks. At this point, there's no one negotiating at the table on the management contract for the public. But if Hyatt wants that much money, then ask for that sort of performance measure. And then finally, take on the challenge that Commissioner Fish has posed about how do we go about preventing cannibalizing the market. How do we prevent a nines-type situation from happening? We'd be happy to work on that. We think your concept may have some viability. Clearly, any rate floor should be variable with the market. And in the end, if that pro forma is one Hyatt stands behind, then they should be willing to live with a rate floor. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions?
Mr. Ramis, thank you. And we heard earlier from Harold Pollan, who is one of the most successful hoteliers in our community, longstanding. And he said, in effect, a rising tide lifts all boats. And he further said that he anticipates to do better in a couple of years than he would without this. Excuse me. Why do you think Mr. Pollan's view of this deal is wrong?
Well, the experience of the nines is telling. We have the real experience of what happens to hotels in the downtown when a competitor drops prices to numbers in the 90s. That was a subsidized hotel. PDC increased its subsidy of the hotel to $17 million. The performance was not satisfied. The hotel couldn't make the payments. They've not made a payment, as near as I can tell, from a public records request since 2009. And in order to compete, in order to maximize revenue, they decided to fill rooms, and they did that by cutting rates. That's a real-world example, and it's a grave concern.
But let me also tackle the question, philosophical question you've raised about the structure of the deal. A deal that was proposed maybe two or three ago would have had the city owning a hotel. And you heard even from Sam Chase that that was not a deal that he would have supported. And I don't think you would have gotten support here. Two or three generations later, we have a hotel that is largely financed off of user fees, which is a tax on the people who use it, which was the model we used successfully in Geldwin when a number of us here said we wanted to limit the amount of public investment. And it's also the model we use at the Rose Quarter to great success. So why, if we've had success at Geldwin and at the Rose Quarter, why can't we use the same model here and anticipate some success?
I think it's impossible to really answer that question about degree of risk unless you know the actual projections. Until we have that data, we can examine what the projections are with respect to rate and occupancy. It's really not possible to rationally analyze what the risk is. And that's what it comes down to. The question is, what's the risk that the public would have to step up and put more money in through taxes raised on other hotels? So that's why we say, give us the numbers. Let the industry experts that are local review that data and determine whether or not these are realistic rates in light of our performance in this market.
Mr. Ramis, last question, just to be fair to you. Council Member Chase also said that he rejected the idea that we're actually subsidizing this. He said we're using this tool to buy a block of rooms and that's the public benefit, and we've chosen this mechanism. So why isn't he right on that?
Well, I guess it's the way you characterize it. That's a description. The real concern of the industry is whether or not the performance will be there. If the performance is there, then we would agree with Mr. Chase's characterization. But the performance fails, and the hotel is full during conventions, but becomes Portland's favorite $60 a night hotel during other times of the year, then the whole thing is likely to be a failure from our industry's point of view.
From the industry members that you represent?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Further questions for this panel? Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
The next four are Tim Craig, Brian Hike, Shirley Burke, and Paige Richardson, and they'll be followed by Mike Kennedy, Tim Maddox, Samuel Murillo, and Max Murphy.
Hello,
you. Okay, Shirley, go ahead. Just give us your name for the record.
Hi, my name is Shirley Burke, and I'm sure most of you guys know me from the Hilton Hotel. I'm here in support of the Convention Center Hotel because we need a hotel that is close to downtown, because there is customers at our hotel that stay clear out in Clackamas because there are no hotel rooms in downtown Portland area. This week I know of two people who couldn't find a hotel in Portland this week alone. Okay? But the reason I support the hotel is that we need good paying wage and health care for workers in Portland so that they don't have to work two or more jobs to make it and still have good food stamps and organ health care for their children. I know personally how that affects families because I used to do that. I went to work for the Hilton Hotel 26 years plus as a banquet bartender, and I have a living wage job thanks to my union and a lot of hard work that we do. So that when the client pays a service charge of 22% of the bill that's supposed to go to the workers, it doesn't go to the workers in non-union hotels. It goes in corporations' pockets, and they get a $12, $15 wage, straight wage. This is not fair. They need to be treated the same as a union worker with dignity and respect. And as far as the Oregon Restaurant Association, they'll be against anything that pays a decent wage. I've been fighting those people for 30 years.
Thank you very much. Ms. Richardson, welcome.
Thank you all. Mr. Mayor, members, I will do my best to be brief. I am here today on behalf of the Coalition for Fair Budget Priorities. I just want to read a letter from one of our members, Mr. Jatin Patel, a hotel owner, not able to be here, but had some thoughts I thought you all would appreciate. I did want to add a little something for President Hughes. He stated earlier that they could find no record of a Hyatt ever failing. And 30 seconds on the internet, I found, state will not be downgraded if Hyatt Regency Chesapeake Bay fails to make bond payments. And that's sort of indicative of the way the discussion has been. There is this great promise. Our coalition loves the Convention Center, loves Portland, would like to see a hotel. We're concerned about the risk. So the risk is out there, and we appreciate your considering the risk and how to mitigate that for taxpayers. So on behalf of Mr. Patel, dear members of the Portland City Council and the Multnomah County Commission tomorrow, as a resident of Metro Portland and a local hotel owner and operator, I have been following the developments in the proposed Convention Center hotel deal with keen interest. The more I learn, the more I'm concerned. If hotel revenue projections aren't met, the bonds will still have to be paid, and as the deal is currently structured, neither Hyatt nor the developer or builder will have any responsibility for those payments. Only us, the local taxpayers. For the moment, let's set aside my sense of injustice and unfairness at the fact that the lodging taxes from my business will go directly to subsidize a wealthy out-of-state hotel corporation paying 40% of their cost for a new hotel. For the moment, let's not think of me as a local minority business owner who employs other local residents and would jump at the chance to expand my business and employ more folks by using my lodging tax revenue as a repayment source for my expansion. For the moment, let's just consider the deal before us. We're giving the developers 10 times as much public money as Metro indicated would be available for the project in their original RFP process, $78 million so far. And we're giving the developers all the money up front, unlike the Daimler deal that was just announced, where the public subsidy has to be earned by meeting performance goals like the number of jobs actually created. $80 million is way too much public subsidy to pay up front, especially for what we're getting in return. According to Metro Councilor Sam Chase, what taxpayers are really buying is access to room blocks to book convention business. I'm betting we can get that for a lot less than $80 million. And how about the hotel design itself? If the hotel is supposed to be a partner for the convention center, then they should not have any significant meeting space in the hotel, and the convention center should get all the meeting business. Certainly, the convention center could use the business. They were half empty last year, and that qualified as their best year yet. The current design has 35,000 square feet of meeting space, which will put it in direct competition with the OCC for much of the year. Again, Hyatt makes money, taxpayers foot the bill. Even the site selection looks to have been an insider deal. The PDC owns land adjacent to the convention center already, yet in this deal, Metro is agreeing to pay top dollar for private land owned by a member of the hotel development team. Successful convention centers have shopping and restaurants right outside their doors. We don't, and OCC occupancy rates reflect that reality. Metro is telling us that building the hotel will spur the revitalization of the area around the OCC. We've been promised this before. You're Metro's partner in this deal. What are you, the PDC, or Metro doing to bring shopping and restaurants to the Oregon Convention Center neighborhood? And are you including the downtown merchants in the planning process?
Hey, now, do you want to ask you to wrap up? I know you've got a letter there, but you can also make it available to us. But
I absolutely would happy to do that. So he's wrapping up. Let's go back to the small business owners here. And if the projections don't come through, we still have to pay the bond. That money is first going to be taken from the pool of taxes paid from other hotels. So Hyatt not only doesn't have to worry about the bond repayment, but their income from their new hotel will come off the top of the hotel's revenue stream in the form of licensing and management fees. And if they run short, Metro has to get the money from somewhere. We understand that ultimately this is Metro's deal and not yours, but we would like you to aggressively pursue safeguards so that the taxpayers and public money is not on the hook if the hotel underperforms. And I will submit that to the record.
Okay,
thank you very much, sir.
Questions for these folks? Thank you both. Appreciate it. We have some more folks
next
signed up.
Next are Mike Kennedy, Tim Maddox, Samuel Murillo, and Max Murphy.
Welcome.
Carla, how many names on the list left?
We'll find out after this. Eight more. Okay, good. Good afternoon. Welcome.
Welcome. My name is Mike Kennedy. I just want to say I support this project that's going on because it's going to bring revenue to the city, bring new jobs, and I feel like people that's coming out of town can see what really Portland's like and come back more.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Hi.
My name's Tim Maddox. Just want to say I'm supporting this hotel project. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Soy Samuel Murillo.
There you go.
My name's Sam Murillo. I'm one of the carpenter representatives for the union, for the Carpenters Union. I'm proud. I'm a minority. And if it wasn't for the family wage jobs that the union has to hire for the whole way across the board for this project, I mean, these are taxpayers at the end of the day, right? You can't not support this project. It's helping everybody across the board. It's bringing jobs. And as far as the Restaurant Association letter that you talked about, I mean, I think they're scared, if anything, because they're going to have to raise their standards to the union standard or the area standard. And I support this project. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us here. I'm Max Murphy. I'm also a representative of the Carpenters Union. This project will put a lot of our carpenters to work. These are jobs that we are always looking forward to doing. And it seems to me we've been looking at putting a hotel project like this together for a very long time. Just like the Columbia River Crossing, it seems like we tend to sit on our hands and time just passes by. I feel like we're not just standing still, we're actually falling behind other cities in this country that are able to provide this type of venue. We also represent carpenters that work in the trade show industry, and they have indicated to me that there's a lot of these trade shows that will not come to Portland because we do not have the hotel capacity. So we're missing out on opportunity, we're missing out on revenue, and that affects everybody, the other hotels and the other restaurants. So I just speak in favor of this project. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you all. Appreciate it. Okay, next group, Carl.
Are Gwen Baldwin, Fernando Gapasin, Crystal Ilinski, and Rehana Ansari. And they'll be followed by Jennifer Graham, Jeff Madden, and Bob Carroll, and Tia Sells.
Good afternoon. You're on first, Ms. Baldwin.
Thank you. With respect to your request, my testimony now looks like something that's been screened by the NSA. It's been scribbled and scratched through. So I will try to keep this brief. Good afternoon, Mayor Hales and council members. My name is Gwen Baldwin, and I'm here today on behalf of the Lloyd Executive Partnership, or LEP. The LEP represents some of the largest property owners in the Lloyd District, including Kaiser Permanente, PacifiCorp, the Trailblazers, and Liberty Mutual. The LEP supports the Convention Center Hotel project as a critical catalyst for economic development and encourages you strongly to move forward by supporting the IGA ordinance and the MOU resolution. In keeping with a privately owned and operated hotel, the investment of public funds has been kept to a minimum. The risk is on visitors. Is on transient lodging taxpayers. It is not on the general taxpayer. And that point sometimes gets played with a bit. The OCC is a significant economic driver. And yet it's been hampered since the very beginning. I mean, this has been around since 1988. It has always intended on having a convention center hotel. And by having a Class A convention hotel adjacent to the convention center with a 500-room block. And that is huge. That's really what you are buying. I know it's been said before, but it can't be emphasized enough. You are buying something that is required to land these conventions. And you also get an experienced, high-quality operator capable of bringing in not only convention business, but non-convention business. That's what this package needs. It's what this package delivers. The Lloyd District is, in fact, experiencing its next new chapter. As underdeveloped property, it's developed into housing, office, and retail. And, you know, I cannot say how exciting the Hassalo on 8th project is. And it just had its groundbreaking yesterday. I appreciate, Mayor, your being there. So private sector is doing development that is going to support this project. This project integrates well with the private sector development going on. But unless we buy the 500-room block, it won't happen. With this project, we all win. All boats do rise. We appreciate very much your leadership in moving this convention hotel project forward, and we look forward to working with you in the future. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Good afternoon. Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Dr. Fernando Gapacin, and I work with Portland Jobs with Justice. In another life, I was a county commissioner in Santa Clara County, and we negotiated project labor agreements of a similar type that you are. We put in the Fairmont Hotel in the center of San Jose. And many of the same concerns of the local hotels came up. And what we were assured of, and it actually came true, is that the economy expanded. There's something else that expanded as well. I was leafleting downtown, encouraging people to support the agreement that the city council is now negotiating. And I spoke to probably a dozen hotel workers. One of them came up enthusiastically, said, "Wow, is it possible that this is going to help us too?" I told him, "Damn right." And the thing is that my experience as a commissioner and as a union leader has been that these subsidies are well spent if they lead to living wage jobs and the actual expansion of the economy. I've been in plenty of cases where I've opposed things like Walmart because of the lack of guarantees around living wage jobs. This is one of the few agreements that I've seen in this area that will truly expand the economy. And so we encourage it wholeheartedly. Thank you.
Sorry, welcome.
Good afternoon, Mayor Hales and Commissioners. I'm Rehani Ansari, Government Relations Manager for the Portland Business Alliance. The Alliance represents nearly 1,600 small, medium, and large employers, and our mission is to promote an environment that attracts, supports, and retains private sector jobs. The Alliance is a longtime supporter of a fiscally viable and privately owned Oregon Convention Center hotel, and we endorse this project under the following conditions. The project must produce a valid business plan that demonstrates it will be able to sustain its debt load and operating costs with revenues generated by the hotel. Visitor Development Initiative funds should be used to backstop the hotel's operating costs only in times of a severe economic stress. And then only for a limited period of time, an existing VDI program should be held harmless. The City of Portland, Metro, and County should commit that under no circumstances will they impose new taxes or fees on others in the hotel industry to support this project. An Oregon Convention Center hotel that meets these conditions is a sound investment, and we urge you to move forward with this important regional project. Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Rehana, I guess I need to sort of call you on this. Does that mean the PBA supports this? I mean, that's the same letter the PBA wrote like 2 months ago. There's been a lot of new information out, so yes or no?
We support it, but we are looking for confirmation or reassurance from the three different governments. We did receive written confirmation from President Tom Hughes earlier this week.
So you got the written confirmation of?
Of those three
no
conditions.
Operation. Okay. So therefore, your conditions have been met and PBA supports it.
I guess we would like confirmation from the city and the county as well. And then we would support it.
Well, just piggybacking off that, other than the sideboards you're asking for, do you have any concerns about the deal as constructed?
No.
And what I understand you raising are concerns about contingencies. So you want assurances that certain things won't happen. But in terms of the way this deal is structured, Portland Business Alliance and its members are satisfied that this is in the public interest?
That's correct. We're happy that Hyatt is assuming most of the operating risk and costs. So those are our conditions. Thank you.
Great. Welcome back.
$80 million.
Put your name in the record again.
Crystal Elinsky. I'm representing 10,000 concerned citizens. And I'm going to put this up so I can see you. I just keep getting that number rolling around in my head, as well as the returning concepts of priorities and standards compared to what we were talking about earlier and a couple weeks ago with the homelessness initiatives. Recently, there's been a few to extend the subsidized housing, to move R2D2, to sweep the homeless. I just think about that money and the investment in our future, and talking about women that need shelter and care and counseling and that whole infrastructure I was speaking about earlier, that money would be such a better investment in the long run than anything we could do for tourism. This is actually an issue with the Convention Center Hotel that has been going on for quite some time, and what I've listened to from people speaking here, we're still not really clear on it, but it seems like it's already in motion, it's being done, sort of like the reservoirs. Once it gets to City Hall and we're testifying, it's already a done deal. This is not a good investment. This is basically another tax break. You know, if we can have our state legislature have a special session for Nike and another one for Intel, and where does this money go? They hire 400 people, I do the math in my head, and it's like, If we need to get our people, our citizens, giving back to the community, living in homes, paying property taxes, getting real income. This is sort of just this pipe dream.
That's all right. It just comes and goes sometimes.
This is a pipe dream. And I'll use the example of, sadly, Merritt Paulson, Hank Paulson's son, who has been so privileged to get all of our money, and we don't get anything back from these sports facilities. It's also, it's a pity for me to see so many people that I really admire from the union work. Since Unite Here started, I've been supporting them. I've been telling people about them. I love what they do, and I do believe in living wage jobs. It's wonderful that they got to this point. But where is the money going? Hank Paulson's son, Merritt Paulson, or the Hyatt conglomeration of Penny Pritzker? These people don't need our money. I don't understand why we don't invest in something that is more real, tangible, and long-term, like helping the homeless. Thank you.
Thank you. We have a few more?
Yes, the last four are Jennifer Graham, Jeff Madden, Bob Carroll, and Tia Sells.
Come on up. And then that's it? You have none other sign up?
That's all who signed
okay.
up.
You get to take it home, the four of you.
Thank you for hanging in there.
Thank you. I'm Jennifer Graham, and for 11 years I've been waiting tables at the Hilton Hotel downtown. I've stayed at this job for 11 years because it's a good job. I have affordable health insurance, job security, and most importantly, I have respect and a voice on the job. It really means a lot to me, though, that the dishwashers and the housekeepers I work with also have those things. When I found out that my hotel was opposing the building of the Convention Center Hotel, I was confused. I work for tips, and my income is directly tied to Portland's Convention Center business. And I've been told many times over the years that our hotel has actually missed out on business because the city can't accommodate larger conventions. I'm here because I want more good service jobs like mine in this city, which I love so much. And I urge you to support the intergovernmental agreement as it stands. Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Well, good evening, I would say, everyone. It's been a long afternoon, so thank you. So my name is Jeff Madden, and I'm the general manager of Mortenson's Portland office. And once this project is under construction and design, I will be the executive in charge of ensuring its success and turnover. So I appreciate the opportunity this afternoon. I will be brief. I'd just like to quickly highlight some information about our Mortenson organization as well as the development opportunity as well. So Mortenson is a family-owned national builder. We're based in Minneapolis, Minnesota, with regional offices spread throughout the country, including right here in Portland and the Pacific Northwest. We have a 59-year history. We do about $2.5 billion worth of new construction annually. We've been providing full-service development services, similar to what we're doing here, for 38 of those 59 years. We do it quite successfully. On that note, we have a track record of successful public-private partnerships and a track record of success delivering complex convention center and conference center hotels, just like the Oregon Convention Center Hotel. We have built and or developed 80 hotels across this country, and currently we have either recently completed or currently in progress with 9 projects around the country that are very similar to the Convention Center Hotel here in Portland. Mortenson has tremendous financial strength, which is important in this equation. We have a $3 billion bonding capacity. What that means is we can provide development cost and completion guarantees that facilitate competitive financing to make this project happen. The private and public investment proposed for this hotel allows our design team, led by locally by Anchor Moisson Architects, to fully meet all the architectural and program requirements that were lined out in the original request for a proposal. The program for the 600-key full-service hotel has been developed and structured with input from Metro, Portland Development Commission, and Travel Portland to assure that the end product that is built maximizes the benefit to the convention center itself as well as the Portland community, and that's very important. Mortenson's a leader in sustainable design and construction, and as mentioned previously, our goal is to easily meet and hopefully exceed silver certification for this project, which is important. And this has been mentioned many times today, and I will say that I very much appreciate the union participation in the meeting today. It's incredible to see that. But along with Hyatt's commitment for the peace labor agreement, we are a signatory union contractor, and we are committed to using union subcontractors and union labor to develop this project and make it a reality. We take seriously the commitment to workforce equity in terms of minority, small business, and women participation. and we share the community's commitment with regard to Metro's first opportunity target area hiring. It's very important. Let me say that not only as general manager of Mortenson's office, but as a participant and a resident here in Oregon, I'm both professionally and personally very excited to make this happen, and I obviously am in full support of the modifications of the IGA and to this project. So thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I think he timed that one.
Yeah, he did. Well.
I'm Bob Carroll. I'm a 35-year member of IBEW, International Brotherhood of Electric Workers, Local 48. I'm proud to be sitting here with my union brothers and sisters. I believe that this project is going to help not only our union members, but also the community. And this is about community. This is going to raise any work, good work, is going to help the community. Every dollar that's spent is going to resound through the community several times. We all know that. I'll keep it brief because actually my daughter is in labor right now. My first grandkid.
Congratulations.
We're certainly not surprised your daughter is part of the labor movement.
Very good.
Good work after all this time.
The IBEW is in support of this hotel, and we urge you to also support the hotel. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and congratulations in advance, but not much in advance. It doesn't sound like
No, it doesn't seem like, no. Thank you.
Hello. My name is Tia, and I'm an on-call banquet server and a shop steward at the Vancouver Convention Center Hotel. That's my union job. And until recently, as many in my field, we have a second job, and mine was at a non-union job. I was also an on-call banquet server. And both were jobs at hotels of similar quality. They're right neck and neck. They're competitors. And so knowing that, you kind of figure that the working environment would be similar, right? No, not even close. At my union job, I work really hard. But at my non-union job, I was required to work harder with more responsibility and half the pay. And my pay is based on tips, and they were keeping them. Well, it's gratuity, but another difference between the two was in regards to breaks, something that's regulated by law, right? At my union job, our breaks almost always happen when they should. At my union job, or at my non-union job, I was expected to work 12 to 18 hours a day, and I would get one 30-minute break and one 10-minute break. And if I asked for anything else, I was looked at like I'm growing a third eye. At the union job, our hours are assigned by seniority. Our managers can't play favorites because they're friends with this one outside of work. At my non-union job, the supervisor's favorites were always being scheduled for more hours with the better events. And the bad thing about that is the non-favorites had to work twice as hard because the favorites were required to do less work at those things. So we had to pick up a lot of slack. And what happened when I spoke to upper management about the lack of breaks and the favoritism in the workplace? I was fired for being a troublemaker. These reasons are why building this hotel is so important, because these workers will have good, healthy jobs, which will help grow Portland's economy and make Portland an even better place to live and grow and work. Workers in this Hyatt will have the chance to speak up for themselves, unlike workers in the non-union hotels around here who have to swallow whatever management throws at them. Give them that voice.
Thank you very much. Any questions for these four? Thank you all. So we're going to close the public hearing but bring up some staff to answer questions. I just want to say at that inflection point that part of the privileges that we have in this job is listening to testimony, and I haven't heard such eloquent and thoughtful testimony on an issue so consistently for so long. So we really had an amazing lineup of people with good ideas and good statements today, and it's just been a pleasure to sit here and hear this discussion. So I know there's some questions for staff.
Invite Andy and Betsy up.
Mr. Shaw, Ms. Ames, you are on for questions. And Mr. Hughes. Bringing up the big guns.
It's always scary when I'm referred to as a big gun.
Okay. Commissioner Fish?
Thank you, Mayor. We've had a lot of conversations the past couple weeks about how we might address the concern of, that some have raised about unfair competition. We've talked about whether we could structure a rate floor or whether there's some other mechanism. And I appreciate Andy Shaw, the dialogue back and forth, and we put some things in writing to provoke a response, and my team is persuaded that there's no clean way to get at this or even a consensus about what the problem is. But one idea that we floated is to require more robust reporting of data so that we can track the question of whether this hotel is undercutting the market during the ramp-up period. And I handed out to my colleagues a proposed amendment to the MOU. This would not amend the IGA, which I think about half the witnesses have said, please don't do that. But it would amend the MOU, and it would, it is a concept that would allow the decision makers to get some data to test the question of whether the blended rate is undercutting the market over the first 5 years. Andy, you've had a chance to see this language, which I intend to offer as an amendment, and I want to give you a chance to say whether it's acceptable to you and the operator.
Why don't you go ahead and read it, Commissioner Fish, into the record.
Okay. Proposed amendment to the MOU language. Metro will obtain a waiver to Portland City Code 6.04.130.D from the OCC hotel project operator, including agreement to periodic updates of such waiver, to allow sharing of the site-specific transient lodging tax information with the financial review team, who shall sign a confidentiality agreement. In addition, Metro will seek to obtain an agreement from the OCC hotel project operator to provide quarterly pro forma variance reports to a quarterly pro forma variance report to the financial review team during the first 2 years of hotel operation, subject to the confidentiality agreement, to enable the financial review team to monitor hotel performance during the important initial stabilization period. It's a mouthful, but that would be the proposal.
Commissioner Fish, having looked over the proposal, it seems to me, I mean, the idea of creating the performance team, which is composed, I believe, of the three top finance officers for each jurisdiction, to look at how the hotel is performing is pretty much necessary in order to know some of the details about how much is going into the bucket and how much is whether Metro is in debit or credit in terms of how much is going to go in. I think the idea that they would report more frequently rather than less frequently is a good idea, and I thank you for that suggestion, and I think that's exactly the appropriate committee or group to go to in terms of sort of measuring the performance of the hotel.
Thank you, Mr.
And
President.
Just to put it into context, in the IGA, the financial review team is going to be looking at the data from Hyatt, their total revenues. This would add the ability to get a report from Hyatt about the initial pro forma, which is what we'd use to set our revenue bonds off of, and reporting back how are they performing compared to that pro forma over the first 2 years, which is sort of that critical stabilization period. So we believe we could negotiate this with Hyatt in the development agreement process.
I gave a copy to the gentleman from Hyatt, and he said he had reviewed it and concept agreed to it. The idea here would be to evaluate that data so that we could see whether or not the numbers are in effect undercutting the market. We've heard today some concerns about the nines. I'm not sure whether there's data behind it or it's beginning to veer into urban myth, but there's still a concern among hotel operators that for a period of time that hotel, public subsidized, unfairly competed. And the intent here is to have the review team provided with sufficient information to be able to evaluate whether it, in fact, is having that impact. Mm-hmm. It's not a perfect solution, but frankly, we couldn't come up with a mechanism that in the nature of a rate floor or some other tool, so this is the alternative, and I, Mayor, would offer it as an amendment.
Yeah, I think that it I think it really does get at the issue in about the best way possible. And my understanding, and Andy can correct me if I'm wrong, the pro forma itself that was originally that we've been working off of has been a matter of public record since the beginning, quite frankly. I'm a little mystified about the charge that we kept it secret. We know that that it has been viewed by the folks on the other side because they misrepresented it at one point in time. And so we know that they had plucked numbers out of it to look at it. So it's neither Andy nor I have, or anybody else we know, has taken a blood oath to secrecy. So, but once they start the operation of the hotel, then the performance becomes somewhat more proprietary, and then it's subject to limited disclosure. Already, hotels disclose to the county finance director in order to
get in the aggregate.
Yeah, which we get in the aggregate. He gets in the disaggregate, and what we're saying essentially is we add an official from each of the other two jurisdictions for this hotel to get that information, and I think that makes a lot of sense and gives us a lot of data to look at in terms of identifying when we have a problem.
Well, thank you, Tom, and the Hyatt representative told us very clearly he wanted to be a rate leader, and
yep.
Their goal is to be a rate leader, of course. We're all banking on them being a rate leader.
Yep.
But this also gives us a chance to verify the data and to determine whether, in fact, that's happening.
And to offer whatever assistance, limited assistance, any of us can be to helping them reach that goal.
Thank you.
Okay. Other questions or issues to raise with the team here?
Do I need to second that amendment?
Okay, we've got the amendments and seconded. And actually, let me move the ordinance to second reading, because that is not up for council vote today, but the resolution is, right? So the ordinance will come back on second reading next week, and we will take action on the resolution, and that's your amendment modifies the resolution. So other questions, concerns to raise with the team? Maybe not. Then I believe we're ready for a roll call on the resolution.
On the amendment?
First on the amendment, on substituting the amendment. Thank you.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Thank you, Commissioner Fish. I think this does improve it. Aye.
Fish?
Thanks to Hannah Kuhn and my team and Andy Shaw for working this out, and I appreciate the spirit in which we're doing this amendment. Aye.
Hales?
Yeah, it's a reasonable additional safeguard. Thank you. Aye. Okay, the amendment's approved, and now a vote on the resolution as amended.
Saltzman?
Well, this was, I think, as the mayor said, this was a good hearing. I think everybody had some great points. And, I've been honored to serve, represent the city on the Travel Portland Board for, at least the last 5 years. And along with Commissioner Fritz, I do serve on the Visitor Development Fund Board. And it's been very interesting for me to do that. I find the hotel and hospitality industry really fascinating. It's just there's so much about it that one from a sort of a political background doesn't know. So it's really insightful for me to learn about this, things like, room nights and PAR and TAP reports. But it also, put aside all the acronyms, what the fundamental truth that has emerged to me is that, we need to do a better job of filling our convention center, and the Achilles heel is the lack of a convention center hotel. I mean, that is just the inalienable truth about the situation. And while we can sort of say, what's the ideal? What's the ideal outcome here? Well, certainly the ideal outcome would be a private entity stepping forward saying, we're going to build this hotel and no public subsidy whatsoever needed. But we're not in the world of the perfect. And, Portland is not a San Francisco, or I think we talk about ourselves as being a first-tier convention center market, but, we're not there yet. We're not a San Francisco, we're not a New York, New Orleans, San Diego, you name it. So we have to work harder, and it means we're going to have to take some risk, and there's going to have to be some sort of a public subsidy for a convention center hotel to occur. And I feel pretty comfortable with the nature of the public risk that we're being asked to take here. And I do feel that we have, although the development agreement still is yet to be negotiated with Hyatt, but it sounds like it's going to be Hyatt that will emerge as the hotel operator and Mortensen as the contractor. And I feel pretty lucky that we have quality companies like that who are interested in Portland. And I don't think they come here, they don't come here to play to lose and walk away with some sort of a guaranteed revenue stream, but a failure of a project. That's just not the nature of Hyatt or, you know, I don't know Mortensen as well, but as I've come to know them, I don't think that's their nature either. So nobody's looking to come into this to walk out with, you know, a bucket full of taxpayer money and a project that doesn't succeed, although there's always that risk. But I'm prepared to take that risk. And I do think that, you know, I do think that the fact there is a labor peace agreement, so I thank Metro for being so insistent upon that at the outset and Hyatt for agreeing to that and, in fact, making it part of their national practice now. I think the testimony of the last woman we had here, Tia, probably if I were to say, you know, it didn't take me much more than that to say, yes, we need a hotel that's going to honor labor unions and going to use union labor in its construction and look at community benefit agreements. That would probably be sufficient right there. But for all these other reasons, you know, Portland can't sit still, as was said. All the cities of our tier in the convention business are doing things. And, you know, we're all competing. We're all throwing money at conventions, and that's part of the business. That's part of what Travel Portland, as the Convention Visitors Bureau does, it's and the Visitor Development Fund, you know, is we throw money at associations to have their conventions here because it creates jobs, it employs people, and it produces a lot of secondary employment, too, as we heard from many of the travel and tour operators who spoke earlier today, too. So this is why we need to take this risk. I think the dividends and I think the rewards are going to be there, and this is something that I feel this is a good proposal, not a perfect proposal, but it's one that I'm very comfortable with at this time and feel that it will reap dividends not only for the city of Portland but for this entire region, and if, in fact, not the entire state of Oregon, because when tourists come here or when conventioners come here, they often do become tourists and visit elsewhere in the state. So I'm very pleased to support this proposal and pleased to vote aye.
Novick?
This is a difficult issue for me because I have some general guiding principles which lead me to oppose this proposal. I have some project-specific, I wouldn't call them concerns, project-specific, there are some project-specific enticements which would lead me to support it, and I wind up kind of splitting the baby. One general principle I have is that I think it's dangerous for governments to get into the business of picking and choosing which private businesses to invest in. And one of the things this hearing has done is reinforced my belief that I am not an expert in the hotel industry, because we've got some people in the whole hotel industry who say this is a great project for the whole industry, a rising tide lifts all boats, this will result in more business for everybody. There's other people in the hotel industry who say all this will do is cannibalize existing business. The answer to what the answer to that question is matters to the city, because if a rising tide lifts all boats, then we will get more general fund revenue from the hotel tax, even though we're not getting any from this specific hotel. On the other hand, if the naysayers are correct, and this will just cannibalize business for existing hotels, that means we're replacing tax-paying hotel rooms with non-tax-paying hotel rooms, and the city general fund loses. And I do need to worry about the city general fund, which pays for good, important union jobs. Based on the general idea that government shouldn't be picking and choosing which businesses to invest in, that leads me to vote no. I'm also concerned about the idea that you should take the tax revenue generated by a business and reinvest it in that business, because that strikes me as a real slippery slope. Anybody who's planning to build a new business or expand a business can come to us and say, you wouldn't have the tax revenue if not for us, so why don't you give it back to us? And I want to be very sure that I'm not setting a precedent I'll find it difficult to wriggle out of. Maybe that comes from background as a lawyer. I worry about precedent. But there are some factors that lead me to applaud this project. I mean, I care very much what Unite here thinks, and I care very much about getting good jobs and good union jobs into this city, and specifically in an industry which doesn't have enough of them. And I care about the construction jobs from simply building the hotel. So when I take those factors together, I wind up with a position which leads me to a no vote today, but with a recommendation to Metro to go back and try to renegotiate. To me, what's special about this deal is the fact that it's main, what makes this different from any other hotel is that it's a convention center hotel. It'll bring convention business. Well, why not tie the subsidy to the specialness and tell Hyatt, to the extent that you get tax revenue from your convention business, then we'll let you keep that and help pay off the bonds. But to the extent that you're getting regular old hotel business like any other hotel, I say pay taxes on that to support public services like any other hotel would. So my request to Metro would be to go back and offer Hyatt that proposal. Another thing I'd like to say is that I think that the risk of saying no to this deal is mitigated by what I heard from Hyatt today, which is that their customers are saying that they would like Hyatt to have a hotel in Portland. Portland is a destination in demand by Hyatt customers. That suggests to me that even if they're not going to build this hotel, which I still hope they would with under the terms I proposed, they're going to build a hotel in Portland. And given the concessions that Unite here has won from Hyatt nationally, I hope that there would be labor peace in that hotel as well, and there would be good union jobs. So I don't think that it's a matter of this hotel under these terms or no hotel at all. So that's why I vote nay with the recommendation that Metro try to negotiate a different deal from Hyatt.
Fritz.
Well, excuse me. I'm happy to be on the council this year for many reasons and grateful to the voters who reelected me. One of them is to be here to vote in support of this resolution. And this has been a long time coming, and previous iterations were not such that I could support them. I very much appreciate Betsy Ames and Jack Graham in the Office of Management and Finance working with Metro, Metro's willingness to work with us and with the county to look at a lot of different issues. And somebody testified that it's a done deal because, you know, we've all had these conversations ahead of time. That's what we do. That's, we look through all of the details ahead of time, and then we take public testimony. And I thought the public testimony today was compelling in many ways. Most urgently that these are great union jobs. This is $120 million in construction costs, which is private investment, $120 million of private investment for good union jobs to build this hotel, finally build this hotel. If I have one regret, it was that I wasn't able to get an earlier start date. I know that Metro is going to be trying to get an earlier start date. I really want to be on hand with a golden shovel. So the first testifiers, the first panel, talked about the visitor, about some conventions that came to Portland, the Daughters of the Nile and the Barbershop Convention. And those delighted me because those were two of the projects that Commissioner Saltzman and Mayor Hughes and I voted to give money to several years ago as part of the Visitor Development Fund. And serving on that board has helped me understand the importance of the hospitality industry to Portland's economy and the amount of money that comes into our society because of the conventions. And we have a very rigorous method of looking under Travel Portland's guidance of which money from the Visitor Development Fund, the trust, the buckets, which conventions are we going to support and which ones not. And if they don't bring at least 25-to-1 in return on investment, we don't support them. So, but they then we're bringing some really interesting folks to Portland who then come back. They are patronizing businesses. They are not only staying at the hotels. Most of these hotels, these conventions, are really big conventions, and now we'll be getting even bigger ones. So we are buying the room block of 500 opposite the convention center, which to me as a parent whose teenage daughter used to go to conventions, it was really important to me that she was going to be right in proximity. We have a commitment to minority and women emerging small businesses in the contracting. We're getting LEED Silver status. We have a financing plan that does protect taxpayer dollar and minimizes risks to the city's general fund. We have adequate parking using private resources, which is, again, there's so many facets to this which haven't been discussed in this hearing that make it a good overall package. And President Hughes, I laud you and your team for looking at it. It's not very often that we get the Portland Business Alliance, the Carpenters Unite here, the Metro President, and the other folks who've come in today to say we all think this is a good project. And I think it's a good project. I'm very excited that we were able to get it. And as I said earlier, the turning point for me was when Unite Here members came in and told me about the discussions that they had, being treated with respect at the bargaining table, which now has changed perhaps Hyatt's entire national model, and I think will change the hotel and hospitality industry throughout Portland. The Hilton's a great example of a union hotel right now, and we heard what happens when there aren't those guarantees. So again, thank you for all of your work. Aye.
Fritz.
Fish.
We're often confused. Thank you. You know, there's a there's something poignant about these kinds of hearings that we have, because I often go home after a long day like this, and I say to my wife that I felt it was a privilege to have a front row seat watching the public testify at these things. And this debate's been no different than other big issues we've had, and it's an honor to have this seat and to be on the receiving end. And I always regret that when we get around to explaining our thinking, it's often to an empty room. And it almost feels like we're not honoring the folks who came before us, but it's usually because it's the end of a long day and people have to go home and cook dinner and spend time with their family. But I want to begin by saying what a honor it is to be in this position, to have to make this decision, and to have to make this decision with so many thoughtful colleagues. And these big debates bring out the best, I believe, in our body, and the first three speeches I've heard I thought were memorable. So I, too, bring some history and philosophy to this, to quote Steve. And I guess I'm wouldn't take a back seat to anyone here in terms of my healthy skepticism about government acting as a private actor or intervening in the marketplace in areas that may be somewhat edgy. And I think you know that historically I'm willing to spend whatever it takes to address things like homelessness or to invest in public safety or other kinds of things, which if we didn't, the market doesn't provide. But this issue raises another set of philosophical concerns, which is, what is the role of government to stimulate something which, on the face of it, we often look to the private sector to deliver? That's why I asked a couple of tough questions of my friend Clayton Herring, because he is often the biggest critic of government's spending in areas that he doesn't think are mission critical. And unlike Steve, I actually have some history of issues coming before council where I got to take sort of a modified view of his philosophy of the role of government and put it to a test. And there are two that come to mind. One was the Sustainability Center, and one was the two stadium deal. Without going through the whole history, I caught a little hell on both, because I had a respectful and, I think, principled disagreement with the way those deals were structured. On the Sustainability Center, I did not think it was prudent for the city to own the building. And I was also, frankly, put off a little bit that so many private actors that stood to gain from that project were so unwilling to put skin in the game. And it caused me to reflect that maybe the risk-reward ratio was a little out of whack. And no amount of branding and no amount of convincing testimony got me over my concerns about the risk to our taxpayers. And on the two-stadium deal, frankly, that was the hardest one that I dealt with, because, like Commissioner Fritz, I'm passionate about soccer. But when I got the final briefing from OMF, even our senior team felt that the risk was too great as that deal was structured. And I followed the advice I got from people who I thought had a better understanding of the numbers than I did. And as luck would happen, the deal came back to us as a single stadium deal, more reliant on user fees, and I think more prudent from a taxpayer risk reward ratio. So that's my philosophical bias, and I appreciate the way Steve framed his concern, because I share the concern. And I hope came to this job with a certain amount of humility, but having done this for 5 years, I have even a greater appreciation of my own limitations. And there's just things that I think I'm supposed to be focused on, and other things the private sector should do, and I try be clear about boundaries. As Commissioner Sam Chase said so eloquently, the earlier versions of this were non-starters for him, and he was a skeptic, and I shared that view. In fact, Sam and I worked together and probably had the same view for a time. But things change and things evolve, and I think what's before us today is qualitatively different. We're not proposing